I don't know what you lot did over half term, but I was up in London attending General Synod of the Church of England. It was pretty much as normal. The debates were mind-numbingly dull. I mean, just duller than usual. It hit a new low for boringness. Stuff about clergy terms of employment, and lots of stuff about who owns parsonage houses, and really highly contentious issues, one of which was, should there be easy access to Bibles in churches? Yes. Yes, there should. Should there be super casinos, and should poor people be allowed to spend lots and lots of their money gambling and starve their children? No. No. But it took over 3 hours to come to both those conclusions. They should have asked us, shouldn't they? They should have asked us. But of course, the big drama of the week was all about the Archbishop mentioning Sharia law, and all the tabloids were all excited, and it was headline news on that Monday morning when I went off to General Synod. And when I arrived at General Synod, the steps leading up to Church House were absolutely thick. And I use the word thick advisedly, thick with journalists, waving microphones in your face, photographers taking pictures. And what they were wanting was to ensnare some guileless little vicar into saying something horrid about the Archbishop of Canterbury. Could they catch somebody out into saying something really uncharitable? And then there you'd be on the evening news, doomed forever. So I thought about it, and I noticed people kind of elbowing their way through, and I did the only brave and honourable thing. I actually covered up the dog collar. And if you fix your eye just over their shoulders as they're waving the microphone, just look past them, and you get by them. So it was all right. I got through. If you don't let them see the whites of your eyes, and you're all right. Anyway, we then got into this huge circular debating hall. Amazing space, circular space, and we got in there and the atmosphere was electric, and we're all whispering amongst ourselves, you know, what would the Archbishop say in his opening address? Would he back down? Would he say the S word? The press had given up trying to catch out innocent members of the clergy, and they'd all moved into a gallery which sits in a great circle above our heads, and there we were holding our breaths, and the Archbishop came in. He's a very unassuming person. He came in very quietly, and everyone rose to their feet, and there was a huge standing ovation which went on and on and on, and you wouldn't read that about that in the press, because they were really hoping for a lynch mob to storm the stage and take him away. But he made a brilliant speech. It was very strong. It was very gentle. He, as always, dealt with the issues very, very straight and very fair. And the press were sulking, and they began to pack up their bags as it became obvious that no murder was about to take place. I think they were hoping for an Beckett being stabbed in the... and it didn't happen. So anyway, we all settled down to a very dull debate about... Well, I can't remember what it was about, but anyway. I was a bit distracted, because on my way through Covent Garden, I'd seen a poster, and I realised that it looked just like Rowan Williams, and I couldn't think what it was, and I thought maybe it was Othello, but then that would be the wrong colour, wouldn't it? And then I thought cabaret, and I thought, well, no, because there's no tap shoes, is there? And just as this very dull man from Wheat Hampstead was standing up to say something else, it came to me that Rowan Williams is the spitten image of the bloke playing Gandalf in The Lord of the Rings, the musical. And actually, he has a slightly theatrical air about him because of the beard and everything. And then I thought, what musical songs, which numbers would he sing if he did open his mouth and instead of going on about whatever it was, start to sing? Would he sing Sharia, Sharia, Sharia? Or would he sing, how do you solve a problem like Sharia? But he didn't. He didn't do any of those, actually. But you can always live in hope, can't you? Anyway, Rowan has certainly raised the profile of the role of Archbishop of Canterbury. You'd have to have been on Mars or in Australia not to have heard that we have an Archbishop of Canterbury who is making statements about the nature of contemporary society, and that's got to be a really good thing, hasn't it? Now, you either adore Rowan Williams, and I do adore Rowan Williams, and a lot of clergy do have enormous love and respect for him, or you can't bear the sight of him. And I did a bit of a popular poll, and I discovered that that my sister actually can't stand the sight of him. And I said, is it his views on sexuality in the worldwide church? And she said, no. And I said, is it his views on the over-influence of the desert father upon 12th century spirituality? And she said, no, it's the eyebrows. And fair enough, love him or hate him. Yeah. I was thinking about mothers in this context, because most of us adore our mothers, don't we? Most of us really, really are passionate about them and are very grateful for them. But you do occasionally get a relationship which has gone terribly wrong. And that love, that natural love that you should have for your mother, goes into a much darker kind of feeling and even hatred. I remember some years ago, a really lovely man in a previous congregation saying that he couldn't cope with Mothering Sunday because he still hated his mother, even though she'd been dead over 50 years. And that's very tragic. So mothers are passionate sources of feeling for us. And mothers, of course, are passionate about their children. I've never been a father, but now I'm a mother, I know that it is the most intense kind of feeling that you can possibly have. It's absolute adoration. There's nothing you wouldn't give them. There's almost nothing you wouldn't forgive them. You'd walk a thousand miles for them. And in the story about Moses we had this morning, where his big sister is so brilliantly clever and quick-witted and she saves him, and his mother, who gives him up into the dangers of the Nile, lots of crocodiles in the Nile, terrible danger, and his adopted mother, the princess, all those women who had motherly feelings for him, although they were not actual, two of them were not his actual mothers, they showed wonderful ability to mother. And I think it's something that we have to remember, that it's not just about biology, it's about the kind of devotion that you bring to a caring role. So I think what we're celebrating on Mothering Sunday is not just the fact that some of us have been fortunate enough to give birth and some of us haven't, but that mothering is about passionate, committed human love. It's about a love that is willing to sacrifice itself. It's a love that goes to a dimension that you can't believe before you experience it. When I was working with children's groups earlier in the week, we used words about mothers like enduring, passionate, total caring. And they said, that's what we think about God. And I think that's absolutely right. We have to assume that God's love for us is the equivalent of or greater than the very best kind of human love. God is perfect love. And we assume that he's judgmental because we're judgmental. And we assume that he's cross with us if we're not perfect because we're quite limited and we have a little set of guidelines that we think that humans ought to follow. But God is far beyond those limitations. He doesn't just love you in an okay-ish as and when kind of way. He loves you in a delighted way. He looks at you with the same love that your mum once looked at you and thought you were brilliant and perfect. He looks at you and he says, isn't he wonderful? Isn't she wonderful? And God has great hope for us, great ambition for us. And I think that's the thing that we really ought to be celebrating this morning, is that God is endlessly joyful in the mere fact of our creation. Amen.